This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
You might assume we're both good at presenting to a live audience because of this podcast. But at the end of the day, when we record, it really feels like we're just talking to one another. Presenting information in person in a formal setting to a large audience is something that still makes us really nervous. To prepare for a live speaking event we're hosting together, we turned to our masterclass subscription to not only refine our presentation skills, but to build our confidence in a different kind of public speaking capacity. Between Robin Roberts, Hillary Clinton, and Kevin Hart's expertise, our confidence skyrocketed. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass helps you actually do it. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors. So whether you want to master negotiate with Chris Voss, think like a boss with Martha Stewart, or plan your dream wedding with celebrity event planner Mindy Wise, Masterclass has you covered. There are over 200 classes to pick from, with new classes added every month, like our latest aha moments from Robin Roberts' Effective and Authentic Communication class that we watched before our event presentation. She taught us how to establish a genuine connection with the audience from the start. I'll always be a little nervous before presenting, but Masterclass prepared us in a way that dialed my nerves down and gave me tools to ground myself. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 50% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of the Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks. We are so excited to introduce today's guest, Dr. Tracy Dalgleish. Dr. Tracy is a clinical psychologist, couples therapist, author of the incredible new book, I Didn't Sign Up for This, which is part memoir, part self-help, and podcast host of the show, I Am Not Your Shrink. We cannot wait to chat with you today about mental load, resentment, your book, all the things. Thank you so much for coming on Shrink Chicks.
Thank you. I'm so excited to have this conversation with both of you. And it's such a needed one too.
It's so wild. It's interesting. We just had this episode came out about hyper independence too, and a few people wrote in as like, "Oh, is hyper independence have to do with mental load?" And so much that's related. So let's step back for one second before we go into this. I have to know, you talk a lot about resentment and mental load. I'm sure lots of people follow you on Instagram. They have to follow you on your amazing Instagram. How did you first start talking about this subject, though?
Oh my goodness! You know, it actually stemmed from my own experience, truthfully. And that was having my second child. And of course, I felt the mental load and the default parent start to show up after having my first. But in 2015, that language wasn't used. And I think that is so important to contextualize this experience, is that when I first became a mother, that was, nobody was talking about that. And nobody was using the word resentment. So here I am, a clinician. I know resentment is a normal emotion. I am in my office seeing clients, and I go home. I'm like, oh, what is this? What's going on inside of me? And of course, as therapists do, we think that we shouldn't be struggling with something. We don't talk about it. We have all the skills and tools. We should be getting through it. And it was something that just kept showing up for me. I would just have this frustration and anger, and I didn't know what that really was until I started to understand the mental load and until I started to understand what actually resentment symbolizes. So I'll start there. We know that resentment is a really complex emotion and it's a toxic emotion. So if we don't address it, it's going to erode your relationship. And I love reminding people that just because you feel resentment doesn't mean you're headed for the divorce papers. It means we have to listen to it because it's telling you something really important. Mm-hmm. And that's what that was for me, is that, okay, something is happening. Something doesn't feel good. And I need to start speaking up to this now. And for many people, I like to use the iceberg analogy. So I think it really helps us understand. It's not one thing underneath it. It's multiple things, multiple feelings like unfairness, jealousy, envy. Brené Brown does a fantastic job talking about how envy is underneath resentment, anger, anxiety, fear, loss, sadness. All of that is underneath that. And I've come to understand it as two things happening. One is you're not communicating what you need. So you've got this emotion happening and you're not communicating needs. That's one possibility. Or the second one is that your needs are not being met. That doesn't necessarily mean that your partner has to meet your need, but you have got to find a way to meet that need for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so good. I love the way you just describe that. And I think it's so validating for so many people. And, you know, the thing that was coming up for me as I was listening to you talk is that, do you think that there are certain times in which we are more susceptible to build that resentment in our relationships?
It's a great question. I'm trying to, what comes to mind clinically, so this isn't necessarily from the research, but clinically, it's when something changes and the dynamic of the relationship doesn't adjust to accommodate the change. Mm-hmm. And of course, we know that we are really good at cementing ourselves in familiar patterns that feel safe, that are known, that oftentimes don't end up helping us. And so then we're not adapting to that change. The classic one in my relationship is the overfunctioning, underfunctioning dynamic. I am an overfunctioner. And naturally, I found myself an underfunctioner as well. And that, I mean, that also, there's no blame in what patterns we develop. And I love to remind people, these patterns are there for a really good reason. They were likely adaptive in some way growing up, right? I became the caretaker. It was easy to solve people's problems. I'm an empath. I can feel those things, right? And so here I am, excited to be in this partnership with my now husband back then. You know, I'm at the grocery store. I'm in the deodorant aisle. I'm like, it'd be nice for him to have deodorant at my place. I'll pick him up some deodorant. And then I became the deodorant purchaser. And then I became the grocery store purchaser. And then I'm managing the nap schedules with my first and second child. And then he's saying, I can't find the ketchup. Where's the ketchup? And then it's the, does he need to go for a nap? Is it now? Or then, you know, and my husband knows, I tell these stories, or I have his full permission. But, you know, then he's outside mowing the lawn and I'm rocking the baby like, Where did he go? Like, it's nap time. I'm managing the nap and he's outside mowing the lawn. And so it's these changes that show up in our relationship that we don't often prepare our relationship for. And then we don't know how to accommodate to those changes.
I had this like really distinct memory of when my daughter was born and my husband's going to work, right? And so, and when you talk about this idea of envy, I had such envy that I felt like nothing really changed for him. Because, you know, he's still going to, this is before COVID. So there was no, we didn't have any work from home or anything, right? Like my husband had no paternity leave. He was back in the office. She was 2 years old. I mean, 2 days old. I'm by myself. And he's just going to work and then coming back, telling me about going out to lunch with his friends.
Having hot coffee.
Coffee. I'm like, why am I covered in puke and naked? Like, what is happening? Right. And there was so much anger that I had that I did nothing about. That I just was like, I just shoved that shit all the way down as deep as I possibly could. And then why do I want to divorce you 2 years later? I mean, but it's this interesting thing of people's like this fear of if we talk about it, then we're going to get divorced. Or if we talk about it, then it's going to make it worse. What do you think that's about? Why do you think we're so scared to talk about this?
You know, it's so interesting being on the heels of my book, being out in the world. So you know that I share the stories of four couples in my book. And the fifth story is my story. And I knew my story had to be in the book because how do I write about the mental load, about resentment, about patterns in our relationships, as if to say I don't have these same struggles. And I really wanted to show up as human in there. And I think what we're doing as therapists today is we're changing that narrative in the sense that your therapist is this complete blank slate. You know nothing about them. But instead, we're using self-disclosures wisely. We're also opening the door to the general public to say, hey, you know what? Those experts, they're normal. They're human too. And I think what's behind that is to say nobody gets away from the pain and struggle we experience in life. Nobody is immune to that. And so, you know, opening up that story within myself to share my own story in there around resentment, around my life changing and his not, it just needed to be told. So now the book's out. The irony is going to the school drop-off and pickup where I know some of the parents follow me, but I don't know them close enough for them to be like, "You're doing amazing things. We loved your story," right? There's this sense of like, oh no, what do they think? They know my story. They know me, right? And it's this, it's the fear of judgment. It's the fear of embarrassment. It's the fear of rejection. That if I go to the playground park and I say, you know, last night was just one of those nights, I'm so angry with my husband. And there are these moments where it's like, we're so far apart. If we go to the park at that moment, and if someone else meets us there with the like, oh, yeah, then we just have put ourselves in the space of feeling possible rejection or feeling like there's something wrong and defective about us. And I know that goes with saying, because I hear the other side of like, well, you should protect your marriage. Yes, you should. You should protect the union as long as it's healthy and there's no abuse, right? And there's abuse, you speak out. But yes, your secrets need to stay with you. You don't put down and vilify and, you know, make the other person look bad. But there is a sense of we-ness when we can say to a friend, this is really hard. This is a really hard season. I feel so alone in this and I don't know what to do. Because as soon as we feel alone in something, that's when shame shows up and that's where we get stuck even more.
Yes. And like there's such vulnerability in that to be able to show up very authentically in your relationships, to be able to say like, yeah, this is really hard. You know, I went to a party the other weekend and everyone was like, hey, like, how's it going? And I decided, you know, instead of just being like, oh, I'm doing well, how are you? I was like, you know, I'm like not doing so great, you know, but at the same time, I'm not dumping, but I think there is such vulnerability and such space to be able to open up vulnerability in those conversations when we are really honest about what's going on. And understandably so, you know, in your book and talking about some of those struggles where people are reading it, but, and they might be able to see that for you, but you're not having the one-on-one conversation, that's understandable that could bring up, you know, some difficulty in those relationships because it ends up being so one-sided in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yet what we know is our healing comes through story.
Yes.
Telling stories to others, having others witness that vulnerability. And there's also this sense of, I think there's two really important things in here. One is we're not personalizing things, right? If someone tells me something, it's not about me. This is about their stuff and what they're going through. And we can practice witnessing that, right? Having that self-other space. But then, gosh, the other piece of just not being alone in this. We feel, it's so fascinating to be in this time. And it makes me think about people who are 20 and who haven't lived without social media. But there's, you know, this period right now where we feel more alone than we ever had. And yet we are more connected than we've ever been. That's scary.
Yeah, it is.
Anyone else feeling like the mental load of making dinner, the planning, the shopping, the prep, figuring out the timing? It's a little heavy to carry, huh? Same. That's why I am so grateful for Hungry Root. The food quality, simple recipes, true tastiness, and delivery right to my door is truly a game changer. When getting started, you take a fun, short quiz and Hungry Root will get to know you, what you like to eat, and more. Then they'll build you a personalized cart with all your grocery needs for the week and give you delicious recipe recommendations to put those groceries to use, so you can sit back, relax, and offload the many steps of meal planning. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high-quality meat and seafood, healthy snacks, smoothies, sweets, ready meals, kids' snacks and meals, vitamins, supplements, much more. My favorite item from my latest box was the honey citrus chopped salad, lemon pepper chicken, and the four cheese tortellini. You gotta try it for yourself. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's gotta taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
I am thrilled that the weather is finally warming up here in Philly. I went to switch out my closet the other day from my fall winter wear to my spring summer wear and noticed that I very much needed a refresh. So thank goodness for Quince that allows me to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Now I have a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I refresh my closet with the high-waisted linen shorts that come in multiple colors and patterns, the comfiest cotton tees, and my latest favorite, the smocked mini dress. And don't miss out on their accessories. Quince has the coolest sunglasses and 14 karat gold jewelry to complete any look. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
We just had an episode of somebody talking about like media addiction and how addicted to phones we are, because this gives us this false sense of connection, right? So I look at you and I look at your feed and I think that I'm connected to you, or I post or you comment back or reply to my story or freaking like it or whatever. And it's like, oh, we have this relationship. But then at night, when things are bad, would you actually reach out to that person?
Mm.
Would you actually call them? Do we have real connection? And it's such a scary thing. And I think it's a really scary thing. I mean, especially as, you know, as moms talk about, like, I don't want that for my kid.
No. No, I think of what Dr. Vanessa LaPointe said on my podcast is that the internet, social media gives us this short, fast-acting dopamine hits, but it doesn't give us the soul filling connection that gives us the longer lasting feeling. And it's so true. I could do podcasting all day with people and have these like fill me up conversations. Yeah. And then when I go home, it's still, although I'm face to face with both of you, it's still that sense of like, oh, don't get the feeling of you in front of me. Yes. So it's, it's quite challenging. And then also what we're seeing in our partnerships that's contributing to resentment and to the mental load issues is, how much are we on our phones?
Yes.
I mean, how many every couple you work with now brings it up. Mm. Every couple brings it up at night. I try to get in bed with you and you're on your phone. And then there's one partner says, but that's my time to decompress. And that's what I do to decompress. Like, well, I'm lonely, right? I mean, we hear this story all week long now.
And Emily, I remember the moment the iPad came into our bed. My husband got it. He won it at like a golf tournament, like, which is so cool, right? Oh, it's amazing. He won the iPad. And then it's like side eye in bed. And, you know, and then he's falling asleep with his like heavy iPad, but like flopping all over
the
bed.
Like the third person in the bed. You guys are cuddling the iPad.
But it's the mistress in the bed, right? It's like this thing of like, wait, why am I fighting with this other thing? And the disconnection is just so bad, right? And disconnection is going to lead towards resentment, towards anger, towards all these things we're talking about. We have a lot of listener questions for you. Are you ready for that?
I love listener questions.
Okay, great. All right. What are your thoughts? So we talked about this a little bit before. What are your thoughts about hyper-independence and carrying the mental load? Do you think they're related?
Yes, I think they're related. So hyper-independence goes into that sense of, I've got this. I can do this on my own. I do it better. If I lean on you, you're not going to be there for me anyways, right? So if we have these narratives and the stories we tell ourselves, then we are going to be more likely to keep all of this stuff on us. Listen, it takes a lot of risk to say to your partner, this isn't working for me anymore. Or to even say, we need to find a standard. You know, Eve Rotsky does a great job talking about the minimum standard of care. That definition for me working with couples in the therapy room has been huge to have. And also in my own marriage, like, what's our minimum standard of care? It's not going to work to send our kids on pink shirt day in the wrong colored shirt because they're going to feel excluded. So if you are on school duty, that's Greg, my husband's, that's his stuff. You got to do pink shirt day too, right? And so you talk about minimum standard of care. But if you can't lean on the other person and believe that they're there with you doing it, then you're going to continue to hold on to the mental load. Mm-hmm. And that also will build more resentment. And so we've got to kind of find this balance of, well, and you both know this, right? Oh, I have to tell you this. 21-year-old Tracy enters into her thesis supervisor's office. She's finishing her undergrad. He is this like 6'3", 65-year-old man, white hair. Like every time I go in there, he's giving me a new research paper. Here, attachment, here, couples, relationships, attachment, attachment. And I come in, say, I've got it. I have it. I'm secure. I'm independent. Right? I'm like, whoa, 21, I've evolved. And he's like, Tracy, independence is fine. Interdependence is better. I remember leaving being like, okay,
sure.
So now I have to go find a partner. But you know, it's just that piece around, yeah, I get it. Society teaches women, especially, be independent, you know, do the thing, rely on yourself. You don't need anybody. And while on one hand, that's important to be autonomous, on the other hand, we have to lean on the other person. And it's not possible to hold all of this on your own.
Oh, yeah.
I would the tit for tat mentality.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, the tit for tat mentality. In what sense? Like, is that part of the hyper independence?
How to switch out of the tit for tat mentality? So hard to appreciate anything my partner does because I do so much more.
Keep it score, baby.
Okay, so fairness. I grew up in a family of fairness, and I know fairness very well. And also, as children, we learn fairness very early on. It's so fascinating to watch my children grow and evolve. And the first thing that happens is, well, that's not fair. Why does she get to have 3 jelly beans and I only get 2? Like, well, if you would like to have another one, go ahead. You can ask for another one, right? Like, we're very much doing this, like, when you have a why does she and you're pointing outwards, you got to point that back inwards to ask yourself, what do I need? So if you're keeping score, then that likely means you haven't balanced enough or that you need to reassess what your needs are. There's something else that you're needing. But listen, you don't go for equal in your relationship. You have to go for what feels fair. It's never going to be 50-50. That's just the way it is. But when someone says that to me says you're holding too much of the mental load and you need to offload a bit more. You need to renegotiate around some of those tasks. Yes.
And maybe read Fair Play.
And read Fair Play. Or better yet, if you're in a hetero relationship, get your man or get your other partner to read the book first.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep.
So, I mean, it perfectly transitions into our next question. How would you describe or explain the mental load to your partner?
Oh, you know, I'm thinking about Zach Watson. He's on my podcast. He's fantastic, providing a male perspective, a heterosexual male perspective on the mental load. And then my husband and I have had many of these conversations as well. Okay. How do we explain it? So it's not, and then I think of how Eve Rosky explains it too, because it's not just like who thinks they go get the groceries. It's like, how do you know what type of mustard needs to be in the fridge? She's fantastic at describing that story. The mental load is not just about understanding the task to complete it, but the mental load is about understanding all of the cognitive labor, all of the thoughts, all of the planning that goes into the actual execution of the task. And again, I think that's very much a Fair Play, Eve Rotsky type definition for what the mental load is. And then defining it as the cognitive labor that is either visible and invisible in the home. And so I remember one time trying to describe it to my husband. This is a journey for us as well, right? Remember, it wasn't there when we first got married or had our first child. I remember saying something like, well, I'm the one thinking about our niece's birthday and planning to get their gifts. And his reply was like, well, no, I go and pick up the gifts too. I'm like, right. But do you know what size she is? Do you know her favorite color? Do you know that last year we got her that Lego set? So this year it's not going to be that Lego set. And have you planned it ahead of time in order to send it out? Cause she's on the West Coast in time. So she gets it and you've given the card. So that to me is what makes up the mental load.
Mm-hmm. In my marriage, it is cleaning out the clothes for the next season. Mm-hmm. I said to my husband, I'm like, you've never once cleaned out the clothes.
Right.
And so what do you think he would say in typical male fashion? Well, if it doesn't fit, I don't put it on her. I'm like, yeah, but then I used to dig through all the clothes and then it's a mess because you're finding the right sizes. We got to do this. And so this amazing thing happens in 2020, which is my husband rage quit his job, which was frankly a long time coming. But we basically were like, listen, quit it. This isn't working for us anymore as a family. We will be fine without it, whatever. So my husband has this day where he is trying to cook something and he can't find anything in the spices cabinet. Now, when we moved into our house, I was 8 months pregnant and I basically just shoved everything away. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is something we're going to deal with later. This is not a now problem. And he's looking for something to cook and he can't find it. And I came home and he said, I get it now. Mm. I couldn't find a single thing. It was so frustrating. I had to take every single thing out of the cabinets. And now I get it. Now I understand why the organization matters.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, he stood up at Thanksgiving dinner and he said to my sister-in-law, who's a stay-at-home mom, I just want to say that I would never do this again. And God bless you. And he quickly went back to work. But
So that also is part of the problem around the mental load is that oftentimes when we try to renegotiate tasks, we give off the execution of something. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because in our marriage, we've had both roles. So I have been the one where I meal planned, I grocery shopped, I knew where everything was, I knew how much of what we had left, and then I would meal plan. Maybe sometimes my husband would make the meal as well. So we would trade off making meals. And then we had a big switch in our dynamic. He's at home and I was trying to do the grocery shopping while he was trying to make the meals. And that just didn't work because I was like, I don't know what's in the fridge. Are we out of broccoli? How many heads do we have left? And, you know, yogurt, what's the level of yogurt? So that didn't work. So I gave it all to him. And so he's got the grocery shopping and meal making. Sometimes, you know, food ruts happen. So we pitch in around deciding what we're going to make that week and make a plan. If we're like on our game, that doesn't happen all the time. So then the other thing we're starting to do is once a week, I will make a dinner, but it is the most frustrating experience. And I share this because I imagine many of your listeners are women. Yes. I share this from my female perspective because I know sometimes we get frustrated at our partners for not finding the things, but I'm in that role now. I find myself getting frustrated when I'm making a meal. Like, where is this? I thought we had this. Why don't we have this? And like, so I get frustrated because that's not my task anymore, like task. Yeah. So it really is interesting when we start playing with the conceptualization, planning, and execution of tasks and seeing that, you know, there are a lot of pieces that go into each task. And oftentimes, you know, I always like to remind people of this. It's not malicious. It's not that mm-hmm. they don't necessarily want to. It's that we, for women especially, have been conditioned to do all of this.
Yes.
Well, and one of the things we say in our marriage is blame the system, not the person.
Yes.
We just haven't figured out the right system.
You have to rejig your system.
Yep. Yes. And mm-hmm. so we have to keep working. And that's about working together as a team.
Did you know that billions of plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles end up in landfills every year? I used to contribute to that waste, constantly buying single-use plastic cleaning products without giving it much thought. But then I discovered Blue Land, and it has been a game changer. Blue Land has helped me eliminate the need for single-use plastic and the products I reach for the most. They are reinventing cleaning essentials. Their approach is simple yet revolutionary. Refillable cleaning products with a sleek design that not only looks great on your counter, but also reduces plastic waste significantly. What I love most is the convenience. With Blue Land, I never worry about running out of cleaning supplies or lugging bulky bottles from the store. From hand soap to toilet bowl cleaner to laundry tablets that each smell incredible, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. I was blown away when I received my first Blue Land order. I immediately filled the bottles with water and their tablets, which was so easy to try everything out. And the ingredients are clean, the scents are refreshing, and the packaging is just so cute. Blue Land is trusted in over 1 million homes, including mine. If you're ready to make a positive change for the planet without sacrificing cleanliness or convenience, Blue Land has you covered. Blue Land has a special offer for our listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
A really fun fact about me that you might not know is that if I let my hair dry natural, it is a frizzball mess, which is one of the many reasons I absolutely love Prose. I truly never thought that I would be able to embrace my natural hair texture. Ever since I switched to a custom hair routine with Prose, I've noticed so many benefits. Less frizzy hair, yes, but beyond that too. My hair is shinier, healthier, and so much more manageable. Filming the podcast every week makes checking out my hair unavoidable, and I have felt so much more confident on camera thanks to Prose. Prose is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do. The custom shampoo and conditioner combo, plus the hydrating leave-in conditioner and hair oil, keeps the frizz at bay. It also makes for the smoothest blowout. People keep asking me if I got my hair cut or went to the salon, which is, of course, the highest compliment. Prose isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're certified B Corp cruelty-free and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. They even have a review and refine tool which learns from my feedback and adjusts my formula to keep up with the seasons and changes in my life. I used this feature when I moved to my temporary house in New Jersey, back to my house post-construction project in Pennsylvania. Environmental factors like water source is something that Prose takes into consideration with their customization. So it was very cool that I had the ability to update my location. Prose is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin, and they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/shrinkchicks. So you get a free consultation, then 50% off at prose.com/shrinkchicks. That's prose.com/shrinkchicks.
When you do carry on these very specific tasks, there's also something about it that allows you to be like very invested in those things and like have more control. We were having this conversation earlier, but when you don't have that task and you're so separated from it, right? It's harder to kind of know where the spices are or, and so there is this level of like being very connected to things when you are taking all of those things on, feel like you have a little bit more control over them. That I think also is at the same time hard to give up.
Yeah, I know people really struggle to hand things over and to give things up. And that does take, and I want to remind people that when you do that, we have to check ourselves of how we're showing up. It's not going to be done the same way, nor does it need to be. It doesn't need to be done the same way, as long as something is done. And then also too, remembering that we always have choices afterwards. So if you don't do, if your partner doesn't, so that let's, we talk, I talked about lunches once on Instagram and people had a really hard time with stepping back from making the kids lunch. Well, what if the kid's lunch isn't made in the morning? What if he wakes up and he's grumpy and upset? And it's like, yeah, and he still has to make the lunch if that's his task. Because what we do is we come in and we rescue. And every time we come in and we rescue our partner, they do not learn. I've shared this before, and I know the wording has kind of hit some people where I've said, let your partner fail. This doesn't mean I'm, you know, sitting in the corner on my phone being like, he's failing, right? Finally, he knows what it's like. Like that's not, it's not supposed to be malicious. It's the, you know, see if he can do the task and then problem solve after. Have empathy for your partner. Yeah, I know, I get it. Making lunches is so hard. The kids are complaining again that you made ham sandwiches. 100% get that. Is there something that I can do to support you? Or what system do you need to put in place? Right? Again, this is not you taking everything back on because they can't do it. You have to allow them to learn up to where you are. And that takes practice. Harriet Lerner uses the expression hanging in, which I absolutely love, right? Change does not happen overnight. You got to hang in.
Okay. So here's another good one. You ready for it?
I love these questions.
Yeah, they're really, people are amazing. I'm obsessed with listener questions. Okay. Why do I feel guilty around asking to share the mental load?
Ooh, that's two. There's two in there. So one is I'd be curious what your partner's response is. So if they are upset about it, you're taking on their feelings and that's leading you to feel guilty. It's not actually that you're doing anything bad. That's just be clear about that. Talking to your partner about this, this is a we problem. You and I have already, like we've said, this is a system. You are working in a system together. So if they're upset about it, that is you practicing validation, separation, depersonalizing it, like giving it back to them, right? You've got your glass wall up. You can see them, empathize. So I think that would be one piece. I think the other piece is really deep in our conditioning around what it means to be a woman and how much we are taught to be small, to not ask for what we need, don't inconvenience other people, be the caregiver, be the good girl. And that really, I think, triggers this guilt that when we are asking for something to change, it doesn't feel good, hard. Yeah. And then I also like to ask people, what did you see growing up? Who played what role? And what's it like for you to be different? And also ask yourself, what do I want to take forward? You don't have to do the same thing your parents did just because. And of course, too, then also, too, when, you know, you have the older generation saying, are you looking after him? Are you feeding him enough? Right. And it's like, that's not my job. That's his job.
I got to tell this story.
Yeah.
So
I love stories.
So Jen and I recently moved office spaces. We have a great company called Therapy Group.
Yes.
About 45 clinicians, best people in the fucking world. Okay. So we moved this. We have been spending the past 7 months redoing this building. It was this massive undertaking. And we finally come to the day that the movers are coming. We're doing the move. By chance. The four humans that showed up to do this move were the four most unhappy humans I've met in my entire life to be doing this move. They were pissed to be there. You would have thought that we duped these people and tricked them into this move, although it was
stated. Cupcakes, we're moving. Yes,
not that we like paid a professional moving company, like you would have thought we duped these people. They were, you know, very pissed that we had an upstairs to our new building, even though it like said on the thing. And so we noticed this thing. So it's the four male movers. And then me, Jen, our amazing head of operations, Nikki, and then our amazing, another amazing staff member, Kate. And we noticed this really interesting thing start happening, which is the angrier they got, the more we started trying to take care of them. Oh. I'm offering them water. I'm offering them snacks. All of a sudden, we're walking. Now, we moved down the street, 500 feet across the street.
Yeah.
We're walking over. We're moving stuff. And so finally, we all like, I was like, we got to like take a break here. And we started this conversation. We're like, oh, we're all so uncomfortable with how upset they are right now. We're taking care of them.
In the sense that they are supposed to be taking care of you by moving these things, but the dynamic that showed up.
But and it was so automatic.
It was so automatic.
And I think, you know, a part of us in this, I think a lot of women in their relationships feel this too. Like, this just has to get done, right? Mm-hmm. It has to get done. And so I'm just going to do it. And I think that that so easily throws your relationships in this situation into an over-function or under-function or piece. And so that was a lot of what was coming up for us was, well, this just has to happen, right? Like, they can keep complaining, but like, this has to get done. And so I also, instead of having the conversation with them of, hey, like, I know this is hard, but like, we need to make sure that we get these things done, or we need, instead of just having this open conversation with them, we started over functioning. We started just picking up that role. And I think it's so automatic to just take it on yourself.
Yeah.
Instead of feeling like you have space to speak up and say like, hey, you know, we hired you for this. You know, in our minds, we were like, oh, we hired them. Like, this is going to be an easy day. Like, we won't have to do much.
And I'm so confused, though, in terms of like the terms of contract, like you're moving.
Yeah. This was a weird situation in general. You know, this is a normal situation, but the interesting thing that came from it.
I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you're like this. You're exactly. Like, I didn't sign up for that.
I'm like, am I paying myself now? Like, what are we paying for? Because I'm moving across the street. We're hauling desks up. But it was so interesting that all these levels started happening, which is, one, we were uncomfortable with their big feelings. Two, we were like, this just has to get done. We just have to do it. We go into hyperdrive. And then three, which is, we avoided the conversation with them.
Right. So that's the other piece. This is what I see commonly in relationships is especially when I'm working with an individual and I'll say, so how did that conversation go? Did you talk about it with them? Yeah, I brought it up. Okay, tell me more. Well, you know, I kind of, right? It was like a door handle conversation. She's at the door telling him something, right? Or it's the like, yeah, I tried to have a conversation and he got mad. And so it's this idea that that one conversation marks the entire thing. And I'm not going to go back and talk about it. And I'm not going to bring it up again. And I'm not, right? And it's this reminder that when it comes to expressing our needs, when it comes to creating change in our relationships, this is not a one-time conversation. You didn't get here by just one move or one step. It is the, let's sit down again. Let's tweak. Let's revisit. How's our system going? How's our system in our relationship going? And we really discredit or discount rather how a relationship operates, which is the most important team that you're running. And a team needs you to sit down and check in with each other, talk about how things are going, what's working, what's not.
I love how you're kind of expressing that this is a process that happens over time and you work together to figure it out and you work together to communicate about it. Because I think it's true is when you're someone who's so used to taking things on yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe you have that hyper independence, maybe you're used to that. And when you reach out for help, or you reach out to say, here are my needs, and that person doesn't respond in a holding way, that it's so easy to retreat back into yourself and say, well, I never should have asked. See, like I was right. I never should have asked.
Right.
But because it's such a brave experience to do something that is so uncomfortable for you, but is for the better of the relationship and then the better of your mental health too. So yeah, just the idea that it is a process and to not turn back into yourself and say, well, I tried, I can never do that again, because I can imagine the amount of resentment that continues to build off of that.
To not turn into yourself or to not turn on them.
Mm.
I love stories. So I have another story.
Yes.
And the thing I have accepted about the mental load and about being in partnership with my partner is that we're going to do these things for the next how many years. And it's about just kind of like, okay, there's a little bit of tension. We work through it. It's normal and healthy. We are on the same page. We know we're in a season together. We've got young kids. There's a lot of demands. Our basement flooded this summer. We're just lots of busy things, right? So anytime we find these like new, I call them like growth edges, it has to be met with compassion, understanding, with empathy. We were at a face wash and I had been opening, you know, as I do, I open the lid and then I'm like scraping from the bottom, washing my face in the shower. I noticed the other one that I think he was using is empty. So I'm like, okay, I left it there. Okay. No, I wasn't trying to be passive aggressive, but I left that one there. So then I'm still scraping at the bottom. And obviously we're both in the shower every single day. And neither one of us has bought face wash. Now, it's not really any of our tasks. So then the next one day, I go to the shower and I'm thrilled to see that he has bought face wash. So I go over to look at it and it says men's face wash. So I was like, interesting. Okay. So I expressed to him, I was like, oh, I know she bought face wash. Like, oh, I know it was an impulse buy. It was a little bit of an expensive one. I'm like, actually, that's not what I noticed. I noticed that you bought men's face wash. And I went to him being very much like, okay, I want to talk about this because I think this is a really curious experience for us right now of what happened. And he's like, yeah, I bought the face wash. Oh, it was impulse last minute. I said, yeah, but what's interesting is you really held you in mind and your context, but you didn't do the we. So it was great that you bought yourself face wash, but where's mine? And so you knew we were empty, but you didn't hold the relational, the self-other, the whole picture in here of like, where's my partner right now? What context are they living in? What's going on in their world? Mm-hmm. And it was just really interesting to see that I know women are trained relationally. Like we're taught to be relational, look outward, look to others, care for people, bring them in, gather, nurture, right? And then men often are taught in the individualistic, right? Look after the self. And there's nothing wrong that we did. We showed up with these conditioned parts of us, but we were then able to say, look at how we could do this differently next time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wait. So I have a final question. Somebody wrote in about a recent Instagram post that you had. They said that, can you tell us more about the idea you posted about, which is the things that once attracted you to your partner might be the biggest sorts of resentment today?
This is such an interesting experience. I remember learning this actually in my PhD, and I'll never forget my supervisor sharing this. And then just how I can witness it in couples ever since. I always start out by saying, what attracted you to each other? And let's say he says, oh, she, you know, made decisions so easily. She was a natural leader. I just love that about her. And then what attracted you to him? He was so easygoing. I loved how we could get together and connect. Okay. And then we, you know, flow through my questions in the interview and get to what's the problem today. She's so bossy. She's always telling me what to do. And then she will say, he never makes a decision. It's always on me.
It happens all the time.
Constantly.
Right. So maybe we can talk about this on a lot of different levels. But we do seek partners that I'll share this as well. I was working through an issue with a client and how her partner was always so out there and doing lots of things. And, you know, and that was stirring up resentment for her. And again, we were tapping into envy for her, because she had shut this part down of her when she got into a relationship with him. She made herself small and she stopped being that person. And so that was a really interesting discovery too. So we have reactions to things that are mirrors for us, that are reflecting something back. So, you know, I do believe that we choose partners that maybe they have something that we're missing. And maybe we resent them because they have it and we don't. We get angry at it because they have it, we don't. Or because that part of them has then bumped up against something within us that we struggle with. So why don't you make more decisions, right? Like if you just made more decisions, we wouldn't have this issue. But you chose someone who actually never made those decisions mm-hmm. before.
Ooh,
what do you think?
Good.
What do both of you think about that?
No, it's so true. My partner had this thing. So one of the things I thought was super hot about him, right, in college, and he would like do not work all week long, like just party and have fun. And then like the week before something was due, he'd stay up like all night doing it and still get an A. Like my husband's incredibly intelligent. And I was like, oh, that's so cool, right? Like we could like have all this fun. And now as an adult, he'll stay up until 3 a.m. working on a project. And I got a kid in my bed by 5. And I'm like, this actually sucks. This thing I thought was super cool and awesome doesn't really work when you have a child. But in college, it was great.
Does he do Christmas or holiday shopping right before? Like, does he leave last minute?
Everything. This is who we are. Where I'm like, let me get that done 3 months early. But in college, I was such a control freak. I thought it was so cool because he was so different than me.
Right.
He but felt look, so he much more free.
He reflected that back to you, something that you didn't have. And now, because of that control part of you that works for you, right? It gets you to do all these cool things, right? But then he can just like go sit in the couch and not think about what's going to happen tomorrow. And you're like, I wish I could sit in the couch and not think about what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm very much the opposite in my relationship. Like when I first started dating my husband, he would be like, okay, like let's go here and I'll meet you at like 7:00. I was like, cool. I don't have to make a decision. Like this is wonderful. Mm. And now he very much is thinking about things. I honestly think he's the one that carries the mental load in our relationship.
Yeah, he does. He definitely does.
Like he's the one who like before bed is rattling off all of the anxieties and things we have to remember. So he very much carries the mental load in our relationship. But yeah, now, and I would say I take more of a laid back role. But there's also a part of me that can really appreciate that in him. That he does remember all of those things and he takes care of all of those things and, you know, can hold me to a different standard, because there also is something that I really envy in someone who can make decisions that quickly, right? Who is able, right? And so this is why my relationship with Emily works so well, is because we really balance each other out in a lot of ways. And so there is a beautiful balance that I think that you can achieve, you know, as long as you're able to communicate through it and in order, and you have to be able to have these conversations in order to get to that point. And I think that that's, you know, in these dynamics, sometimes where we fall short is really talking through a lot of these things.
Yeah. And building our perceptions and assumptions about the other person, right? Yes. We hold that so tightly that we think we know what's going to happen, or we assume why they've done something or why they said something. Our minds are so powerful and they really trip us up when it comes to connection and working through hard conversations.
Absolutely.
So, Dr. Tracy, as you know, on this show, with every guest we have, we play a segment called Calling Bullshit. And we ask you to call some type of BS in your field, your topic of choice, whatever you want. what is a bullshit you want to call today?
The expression, don't go to bed angry.
Yes.
I see that one showing up. I'm trying to educate. I
see that one showing up.
Oh my goodness.
It's probably 1 million years ago.
Yeah, yeah, it's actually, I think it's biblical. It's actually based in religion. And, you know, I want to challenge people that I get it. And, you know, that has been, I think it was even said at our wedding as well. You know, someone passes that down all the time. And what I think is so important to rephrase that too is it's not that you need to resolve everything. Because here's the thing, when your emotions are high, when you're dysregulated, you can't make sense of things. One person's flooded, the other one's trying to be heard and understood. And oftentimes you're fighting to be right, right? Let's just resolve this. See it my way. No, see it my way. It's at that point where you shift out of the problem. You put it in a box, you put it on your shelf, or, you know, you put it at the kitchen counter and you say, we know we'll come back to this. Let's connect. Let's give each other a hug because we love each other and we're in this together. And that is what you do going to bed, not about resolving this, right? So the emotion of anger is not a bad thing, but it's that we want to focus on feeling connected in some way and then moving forward. I don't know. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think?
Love that. We love that. We debunk that all the time.
Yeah.
It's such a good one and so important for people to remember.
Yeah. I saw like, you know, like those like home goods signs, right? I saw one that said, don't go to, or always kiss me good night and don't go to bed angry. And I was like, oh, I turned it backwards in the store.
Yeah, good job.
So that was my passive aggressive
move. Good job. Oh, good job. You got home goods.
I showed them,
you really showed home goods.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and also too, like, you know, honoring that. If I'm having such hard feelings tonight that I can't give you a kiss, I want you to know we're in this together. I love you. I know we'll get through this. I'm going to honor where I am right now. But for us to trust that this doesn't mean we're making or breaking anything. It just means that, like, you know, stuff is hard. I need to sleep. And sleep helps everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Truly.
I'm gonna find that sign and I'm gonna buy it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'd appreciate that, my love. Dr. Tracy, we can't thank you enough for being here today. Where can people buy? I didn't sign up for this. Where can they listen to I'm Not Your Shrink? Where can they find you?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the best place, I'm on Instagram. Send me a DM. Please let me know what stood out for you from today. I love having those DMs come to me. So please do that. You can, and that's Dr. Tracy D. Website is drtracyd.com. And all of the links and details are there. And then all the links to my podcast are there as well. So that's the best place. But I have lots of free resources that you can check out. And then my book, I Didn't Sign Up For This. Grab it. You'll enjoy the stories of how couples built interdependence.
It's incredible. We were lucky to get to read it as well. You have to purchase this book. We can't thank you enough for listening to today's episode. We always ask you to rate, review, subscribe, follow an Apple podcast, listen wherever you get your podcast. You can follow us at Shrink Chicks or The Therapy Group. If you're looking to connect with a clinician, we would love to hook you up with that. Check us out, thetherapygroup.com. And don't forget that to grow yourself, you got to know yourself. We'll see you next week.